Could you introduce yourself?
So my name's Helen Derbyshire, and I'm the director of an organisation called Access Info Europe, which works to promote our right of access to information. And I'm talking about a right. It's a right that's been recognised by the European Court of Human Rights as part of our freedom of expression right.
Could you tell us what you talked about here at the Republica?
Well, here I'm really talking about the latest developments on access to information, transparency, which is a result of having information, and also accountability and participation. Because access to information isn't a right just on its own. Access to information is a right that we can use to hold our governments accountable and even to participate in decision making. So what I've been talking about is, in the current context, including in the context of a very deep and very significant crisis, how do we as citizens participate in the decisions which are going to affect our futures? And in order to do that, how do we get the information that we need to make our to form our opinions and to make our voices heard?
So what do you suggest?
Well, I suggest that people use their right, use access to information laws. So we have, across Europe, in most countries, we have an access to information law. Uh-huh. In Germany, the Informationsfreiheitsgesetz.
Well
and
done.
Yeah, thank you. I've been practicing before I came to a beautiful sunny Berlin. And we see a range of the strength of the law on paper and the implementation in practice varies across Europe. We have countries like Sweden and Finland, which have a very long history of transparency, down to countries like Greece and Italy, which are very weak. And it's not surprising that those countries are suffering under the economic crisis because they have been very corrupt and a lack of transparency. Where I live, Spain, there's no access to information law at all. Yes, it's the
really?
Largest country in the EU without an access to information law. We're trying to get the government to adopt one.
How is that looking out for you?
The government's produced the draft. It's a very bad draft, and we've had a massive campaign, 86,000 people signing an Avaaz petition calling for a stronger law. So that gives you a bit of the idea across Europe. Interestingly, in Central Eastern Europe, we've got somebody I just met here from Slovakia. Slovakia is doing really well. Slovenia, the Czech Republic, Croatia, they're doing very well on access to information. Even Serbia, which has had a much more recent transition. Now, where's Germany in all of this, I can imagine you're asking. Germany, I would say, is really in the middle. It's somewhere between Finland and Spain.
Okay.
It's or Sweden and Greece, I'm not sure. Germany has an okay access to information law, but it's not incredibly strong. It doesn't apply to, it applies to the administration, not to all branches of government. And there are exceptions in the German law which are not balanced by a public interest test. So if I'm asking for information which the government says might harm some interest,
like
for example national security or something like that, then it's not balanced by the public interest in knowing the information, which some other laws are. I'm pretty sure that's right. You should check that with a German legal expert, but I'm pretty sure that's right. Anyway, so it's not the strongest law. It's relatively young. Imagine Sweden, 1766, they adopted their law. Germany, 2006.
Wow.
So Sweden's got, 240 years of practice of having a transparent administration. When you ask a Swedish public official for information, that is their number one priority. Why? Because the citizen asking is the boss. And when your boss asks you to do something, you jump, because we are the bosses. We pay our taxes. We vote for the governments. They should be working for us.
Can I imagine, as you mentioned, the Scandinavian governments? I remember when I read Jeff Jarvis' book, he called it, the whole transparency issue, that governments have to work like public by default.
Yes.
Do the Scandinavians come close to that, or are they public by default?
I would say they come close to it, a lot closer, as I say, than some other countries or in other regions of the world. But even so, there are issues. One issue we've been working on recently is following the flights that took people to Guantanamo Bay. Believe it or not, human rights activists are still trying to build up the full picture of what happened with the extraordinary rendition program by the CIA. And we've been filing some requests recently, and it's very interesting because we got information in Portugal, for example, but the Swedish government or a Swedish body that holds the information refused, the same in Germany. So when it comes to very sensitive issues, every state has its sensitive points. For Sweden, it's very, and probably for Germany as well, it's embarrassing to have been involved in this, and the governments don't want to release information about the extent of their involvement. So there's always something you can't get, but that's our job to keep digging, really.
You showed the audience your website. Can you talk about that?
So this ask is called Ask the EU, and it's one of the projects that we've got running. And it's a website where we make it easy for people to file requests with an EU body. So the EU's, it's not that complex, actually, but it's a bit complex. So if you're thinking, I'd like to know about the EU Common Agricultural Policy, or I'd like to know about the EU Medicines Agency, mm-hmm. you can go to one single website, find the body that might have the information you're looking for. We have little descriptions of what each of them do. And then you can file your request by email. And that way we guarantee to deliver your request for you. And we'll keep a track online of whether or not the public body has responded in the 15 working days they have to respond. So in Europe, they only have 15 working days to respond. In Germany, it's a bit longer. It's 1 month. So anyone who's thinking, I'd like to know something from the EU, go to asktheeu.org and you can put your request.
And how does the commission, like EU commission, how do they cooperate?
Well, not so bad, actually. We were very worried about that at the beginning. And we talked, we were very lucky because we launched the website at a meeting organized by the European Ombudsman. And we talked before to the Ombudsman, to the Data Protection Supervisor. We let them know what we were doing. And we said, look, especially under the Lisbon Treaty, because the Lisbon Treaty makes it a right. We have a fundamental right of access to EU documents. So there's really nothing they could say. Sometimes they try to insist that you use a web form, but you don't have to. You can use our website. And the good news is that they are responding. And I gave an example. We got somebody from Germany, Friedrich Lindenberg of the Open Knowledge Foundation here. He got information about the EU budget that is not available in Germany, or at least in Germany, it's not available in a machine-readable format. So I want the budget in an Excel format, not in a PDF. And he managed to get it at the EU level and is still fighting to get it in Germany.
It's amazing.
Yes, it is amazing, but it's amazing what you can get and it's amazing what you can't get. So always try, because you never know.
Can you tell us what most people want to know from the EU?
I do a lot of trainings for different kinds of people, civil society, journalists. Mm-hmm. Those people really want to know, I mean, maybe the journalists are working on some journalists from the Balkans who are trying to find out about organized crime and corruption. They want to know what the EU is doing about that. We're working with a health NGO in the European Union, working inside the EU, that wants to know about health policies. But I would say right now, today, the biggest question is about the financial crisis. And that's where we're finding it difficult to get information. Today, as we speak, the finance ministers of the EU are meeting again in Brussels. What are they talking about? Can we know? Can we have our say? That's the big democratic challenge that we have now.
I find it surprising that even like a lot of, as you talk about NGOs and journalists, they actually come to you, to your side, and ask for the information instead of like in old school days, asking
journalists and NGOs are used to asking, but journalists are used to asking the spokesperson or a contact, a friend. And the problem is when the journalist doesn't get the answer, the spokesman doesn't want to give you the answer because it would be politically embarrassing, for example. And that's when people come to us and say, actually, no, I know I have a right, so tell me, if I'm not getting the information from my contacts, how do I get it more formally? Journalists and NGOs will continue to work with and have contacts inside government, but the really interesting thing is they are now realizing that when they get stuck, then there is another way to try to get information. And we actually have a training handbook for journalists called Legal Leaks. We're trying to make the difference with WikiLeaks. we try to help you get information legally rather than relying on someone to leak it to you, which sometimes you will still need to do that. Sometimes you still need your leak, but it's better if you can get it formally, and then you don't have to worry about any criminal charges for handling stolen information or anything like that.
As you mentioned, WikiLeaks, for WikiLeaks, there always needs to be like a whistleblower. Do you support?
We still have whistleblowers. Right. We believe as an organization very strongly in the protection of whistleblowers. If we're talking about WikiLeaks, you know, Julian Assange has become the hero, but Bradley Manning, who leaked the information, is the man who's paying the price for really releasing to the public some information that we should have known. Mm-hmm. It's true that maybe not everything in those cables we should have known, But this is exactly the problem. When you have overclassification of information, you mix the really sensitive stuff with the not so sensitive stuff. And that's what happened in the WikiLeaks scandal. It's really interesting that NATO advises member states not to overclassify, because you don't know which are your real secrets and which is information you just really might find embarrassing if the public knew about it. So we talked, and ministries of defense are often very good about knowing the difference between this information would be super sensitive if it got out and the rest doesn't matter. So that's something that we get involved in discussions with governments about. What do you really need to keep secret? Now, if you're in a war and you've got information about where your troops are going to be tomorrow, obviously keep it secret. But if you're not in a war and it's about how much we're spending on defense, let us know about it. We've been asking in different European countries information about suicides in the armed forces, for example. Sensitive topic, but it's not going to damage national security. Right. So there are plenty of things that are related to national security which do not actually damage it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Very good question.